All right, we are live. Welcome to the Bitcoin Jam on Friday, April 4th. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Let's get this puppy retweeted.
Oh, yeah. All right. Get the retweets going. I think in the past, we've missed it and then nobody shows up. So it's nice when we actually have people come here. And I know Steve's been really good about encouraging audience participation. So we are always down for audience participation. If you do show up and have questions or topics or commentary on the stuff that we're talking about, we love to loop you in or kind of loop your comments in so we can talk about them and address them and give you credit for it.
For sure.
All the smart ideas.
Indeed.
I think we've got a bunch of stuff. It's never a dull week in Bitcoin. So a bunch of stuff to start with. but actually, I'm going to go off script. We didn't talk about this explicitly in the doc that we used to gather our stuff, but I need to share a little bit of my own pride. And I know you guys know, and every episode turns into a vibe coding episode.
Oh my God. Another vibe coding.
Here it goes again. But I've actually accomplished two, I'd say, important goals in vibe coding and kind of Bitcoin related stuff just this past week. So on Saturday, I was vibe coding and I got a full Noster app created and deployed.
Oh, let's go.
And I think Steve has actually used it. Maybe Max
hadn't used it. I was an early adopter.
This is the one where you sign the message and post to different relays. This
would create, create an account or, you know, a quote account. You create,
create an identity.
You create an identity and then you can post. And I did it. And it was really simple, beautiful.
Sweet.
So I wanted to prove that without writing a line of code, I could build a Noster app. Now, it's a simple Noster app, but I think it demonstrates that people who maybe don't know how to code or can't code should be able to do it. That's what I wanted to prove. And I think that's, I'd say, decisively proven. It's not a super useful or differentiated app versus what else you can do on, you know, with people who've been building Noster apps the traditional way for years. But I think it's a good proof of concept. And I think there's a lot of places where Noster and Lightning and Bitcoin and all can overlap, and sort of having Noster available, having it available is like a application surface in a sense can be useful. So I wanted to prove that. And then the other thing I wanted to prove is that I could build a Lightning game. So I haven't deployed this to the web, but I did complete end to end. You know the game Snake?
Of course.
So I built a Snake game where you have to pay one Bitcoin to play. Steve's laughing because he knows that's really what people typically would call one 100 millionth of a Bitcoin.
One of 2.1 quadrillion possible Bitcoin.
But you can use that to open basically a paywall. Then you play the game of Snake, and if you lose, you can pay again to play. Or if you win, you actually get 2 Bitcoin back. And it accrues a prize pool. So everybody who plays the game pays in. And so you can, you know, you could eventually do other kind of game logic mechanics around how that prize gets awarded. But I wanted to prove that that could happen. And I've now proven that that can happen. And I literally didn't write any actual like handwritten lines of code. I just vibe coded the whole thing into existence.
That's awesome. It's amazing.
Two questions. I think this is super, super important, especially with the hackathon coming up, which we had a great meeting about that yesterday. Super exciting. One, if folks wanted to try, I know you said you haven't deployed this one on the web yet, but the Noster app, where could they try that?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd recommend people trying it.
other than me.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think it's cursor-noster-message.vercel.com. So I didn't use like a sexy URL, and you know, maybe we can include it in show notes if people want to try it. But
they can go to your Noster account, like on Primal, no? I'm sure that would be the easiest way.
I haven't posted it there, but yeah, you could find me at primal.net/DK.
Cool.
And that's how you find my Noster account. And I should just post a link to the Noster message signer thing that I made. And that one's fully deployed and you can use it. It's not super secure or something. There's probably lots of ways to break it. So it's really like prototype demoware, but its purpose is to prove that this stuff can be done. And it's decisively proven, especially for the Noster case, actually on the web.
The second thing I was going to say, and maybe this will be you, maybe this will be someone else, but it seems to me like the thing that I want right now, because I tried vibe coding, you know, 6 months ago with Noster stuff. I know it's gotten a lot better. Just like a very simple, whether it's like a Substack post or a video of just like, I'm a total noob. How do I like step by step, like treat me like, explain like, I've never used Replit. What is, do I use Replit? Do I use Cursor? I think that, I mean, I would love this personally to try next week and vibe code my first app. Like, I guess as a question to even start, like, where do I start? Do I, should I go to Cursor? Should I go to Replit? Like, what do you recommend?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Good, good question. I was about to make a video. Actually, I think I mentioned on Nostrix, some people were asking about it. So I think I mentioned, oh, I should make a video to show kind of what I did. And I still intend to do that. I haven't done that yet. But I kind of have it all set. So I've played primarily with Replit Agent and Cursor and Windsurf. And so Replit Agent is kind of like the very beginner's training wheels.
Agent V2?
Agent V2 is the one that's out now. So I think if you use it, you're using V2. You know, if you
have to go, you have to go into settings and enable it actually.
Oh, it has a special setting for that.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. So then maybe
that's what I
Replit Agent is way better than I thought, because I've been using it and generally happy, but I guess I haven't explicitly flipped the switch to use V2.
Yeah, you got to flip the switch.
Okay.
But so, my answer to your question, Max, is that it seems to me like there's just a ton of tools. You can combine tools. So there's like this combinatorial explosion of ways to go about it. Seemingly impossible for one person to be on top of all of them. But I mean, I would just pick one tool or one combination and get going, starting.
Totally. And I guess what I'm saying is like, you know, and maybe it could even be from this podcast or DK, maybe it's your video or Substack, but I think whoever writes the first like super clear, like, hey, I've never coded in my life. I want to build my first Bitcoin app or my first Nostr app. Like literally just like walk me through like a child. That's going to go viral next week. Mark my words.
Well, yeah. The other thing I'd say, I mean, David has more experience than me doing this stuff, but I vibe coded a couple of games and it really, you can be a child and do it. You literally just type in prompts like create a game with an axolotl.
Yeah.
Return. And then it literally creates a game, makes a bunch of assumptions, and puts an axolotl in the game. And it looks like a late 70s graphics game, but it is a functional game. And then you can type in, I want to be able to change the color of the axolotl. Yep. And then it writes the code for that and lets you play the game. And then I want to add I want to add levels to this game. And then it does that. You can literally be a 7-year-old kid and do this.
And Max, you don't have to be embarrassed if you don't know what an axolotl is, because I did not know what it is. You're sitting there quietly not asking. I actually had Googled this when Steve shared over the weekend that he'd done this. And I was like, what the heck is this?
Am
I
supposed to know? An axolotl.
Oh, of course.
This, my friends, this is very common in the south of Mexico City. It's a little weird. I actually do know this because this is kind of like kind of messed up because they're endangered species. But I knew someone who caught one and kept it in an aquarium. Anyone that hasn't seen this before, Google it. It's a very creepy looking creature. I don't recommend imprisoning any animals.
I think every child knows about it because I think Minecraft made it popular.
Oh, okay. But
every kid knows about it
like Max.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I butchered it, but that's how American kids call it. How do you guys think it's spelled? Right? Maybe Max knows since he knows how to pronounce it.
I saw it in our chat when you told me about this over the weekend, I think it was. And the first thing I did is I copy pasted to look it up, like, what is this thing? And I don't remember how it's spelled. So it's like axoltyl or something. I don't know. There would have been an extra L-O-N.
No Y, but yeah.
No Y. Oh, okay. I just made that up. So
unusual word, unusual creature, but it's very easy to vibe code this creature into a game.
I'm excited now.
And you did that with Replit Agent V2. And did you deploy it to the web? Like, can we play the axolotl game?
I began that process and then stopped, but I plan to do that.
And Replit handles all the hosting for you, right? You don't even have to.
Yep.
So if I register, if I go to like Namecheap or whatever, and I buy the website, I mean, I'm just thinking because I actually haven't announced this publicly yet, but I'll say I've got a new version of my website up, hivemind.vc, a little alpha drop. But there's a couple of like little tweaks I want to do before I announce it. But honestly, that was a long, arduous process. But now I could, in theory, just vibe code my own website and launch it.
Yes. In fact, yes. And an example of that, you know, just yesterday, late afternoon, almost early evening, we had the team meeting for the hackathon, right? Max and I were there. There are nine of us, nine volunteers organizing this hackathon. And each of us had to like raise our hand to take action items. And one action item Austin took was to create the website so that we can accept application, you know, explain this hackathon, what is it about, accept applications. And he vibe coded it last night and he already has it done.
Did he use Replica to deploy?
I'm not sure which. Oh, no, he used Lovable.
So, yeah, I was gonna say,
I don't know if Lovable, he just has a...
Lovable is the one that everybody recommends for kind of UI front-end design web page stuff. So I think like Replit is maybe very accessible and much more like for building full stack applications, you know, front-end, back-end stuff. I think Lovable is really well known as being like super design forward front-end deployment stuff.
Yeah. One thing I think is kind of interesting. So obviously for our own hackathon, I'm going to become at least somewhat of a vibe coder before we do this. I'm inspired by you two now. I thought it was only DK because DK was a professional vibe coder. But Steve, if you're also a pro now, I got to step my game up. I can't be lagging. There's actually a really cool hackathon I saw. Shout out, actually, Anjali showed this to me. But next weekend, which is a Reweird the Web hackathon. It's people I don't even know. I don't, I think it's at like Entrepreneurs First is hosting it. It looks super cool. And the thesis is basically kind of like, how do we make the web weird again? How do we make the web cool again? You know, it's kind of like the small web, which companies like Coggy and others have pushed. And I'm reading through this and it's a really cool idea. It's like, yeah, it's a hackathon. You can use AI, but do it with taste. I think it's someone French organizing it. So of course they have taste. And my biggest takeaway from all this was like, I don't know if I'll be able to go. I may try, but is, man, these people, they don't have no idea what Nostr is. But like, how perfect would that be if you could just go and like show them, hey, right now I'm going to vibe code a weird, tasteful, long tail, bizarre app. And oh, by the way, here's this like pre-built identity and payment system that you can just plug in and, you know, in the very thousand true fan sense of the word, you know, find your weird niche community online. Start making money from it, but in a tasteful, non-crappy commercial way. So maybe that's a goal if I do that to be ready to show them my first vibe code in Nostr app.
Yeah, do it. And I think if you want to do things like if you want to vibe code with Nostr, I would try to start very simple because it's, you know, a lot of times when you know, I see people vibe coding, they start something new and they begin with like, you know, a big ambitious project, but it's almost more like an art project. And so it doesn't have dependencies on other software to, you know, maybe there's some graphics library it's using, but it's not like dependent on other servers existing. Whereas like, if you're trying to do something with Nostr, you need your WebSocket connections to the relays. And there's stuff like that that gets a little trickier. It's solvable, but there's like one of the errors that I made initially, which I don't think I recognized early and sort of took some vibe debugging, was I suggested, hey, let's make an app where you create an identity, user inputs a message, and then publishes out to a dozen or so common relays. I think that was roughly the initial query. And I think that was basically right, but it kept failing in some way that I couldn't diagnose. And then I think I figured out, and I didn't even study this carefully, but I think it was not broadcasting the identity to the relays before trying to broadcast the message.
Interesting.
And there's probably like a Nostr protocol detail that says you're supposed to do that. I just assumed you're probably supposed to do that.
Yeah.
I didn't even study the protocol. So I told it to make sure that it's doing that in case it wasn't. And that was kind of the thing that unstuck it for me. But all that is to say, like, start with a very simple thing, especially if it has other dependencies on other servers or APIs or whatever. And just get that working and then sort of graduate up. So like I did my Nostr thing, I did separately without Nostr, did a Lightning thing. And then I want to get the Lightning and Nostr thing working together. And I'd like the Lightning to be, you know, self-custodial and all that. So
I'm going to make a selfish request, either of you, DK, or someone listening to this this podcast. I mentioned you guys, I have a birthday coming up.
Yeah.
The only birthday gift I want from the world right now is Eli 5, help me build my first Nostr.
Yeah. Dude, I'll make that video for you this afternoon and we'll have it in time for your birthday.
Yes, we can celebrate. Yes. All right, let's go.
Cool.
What a great present.
So that was our vibe coding intermission before the real show. Any other last minute details on vibe coding you want to mention?
Well, with the coming tariffs and the economic repercussions, everyone's going to be everyone's just going to be at home vibe coding because they can't like buy a car anymore. Drive around or
sounds fun,
right? And there are no tariffs on cryptography yet, right?
Not yet. Not that I'm aware.
We used to have. Remember in the 90s, there were like export controls on cryptography.
It's ammunition, man. Come on.
Yeah. Do you remember those T-shirts people used to wear?
Yep.
And I think didn't EFF do something to sort of help? Anyway, I think we should play around. We're going to get to play with all this stuff. And Steve, you were making the transition, so I'll let you let it rip.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess the news this week, builds on the past few months of tariffs. And there's, so the U.S. administration announced a new form of tariffs. I'm not super well studied on it, but I think it's like uniformly applies like 10% tariff to every country in the world. And then certain countries have even, I think I saw like 20% for the EU, and China's even higher. And then some countries have responded in kind with their own tariffs. And anyone paying attention to the stock market has seen that dip substantially. Is actually like a top 5 or 10 list of all-time one-day drops. I think the S&P 500 dropped 4.8% yesterday.
Which is like biggest since COVID or something?
COVID, I think, is the biggest of all time. But, you can rank it up there with 2008 and COVID and big moments in time like that. And I guess, one thing related to Bitcoin is just how has the Bitcoin price responded? Because at least investors like to wrap their head around, is Bitcoin an asset class that is not correlated with the stock market, or is it correlated? I think anyone that is a Bitcoiner, studied Bitcoin, the asset, would, I think most believe that at least long-term, it will be uncorrelated with the stock market and really any other asset class, similar to how gold is uncorrelated. But in terms of its actual behavior, you can pick different moments in time periods, not moments, but like periods of time, and demonstrate that it is correlated with stocks. It isn't correlated with stocks. So you can play that game either way. You can make either argument. And I think it's because it is, there are reasons it's correlated with stocks today, and there's reasons there's not. When the interest rates rise or fall, that impacts stocks and that impacts Bitcoin. So that's where, an event like that happening, you're gonna see correlation with stocks, and that's what we've seen. In the case of the tariffs, Bitcoin hasn't dropped as much as stocks. Another phenomenon with Bitcoin is because it's 24/7. If there's news that drops Friday afternoon or during the weekend before markets open, Bitcoin's a great leading indicator of what's going to happen Monday morning when markets open. So I think that played, or maybe it wasn't over the weekend, but overnight it played a role. The new tariffs were announced like late in the day, so Bitcoin price dropped. But,
it was after New York market closed.
I think Bitcoin price like went from 83K to 87K. It was rising, and then it dropped back to 82, 83K with this news, an indicator for the next day for the stocks. But the stocks have gone down like successive days substantially. And Bitcoin is, the last I checked this morning, it was like 82 or 83K.
I just checked again. It's back to 84, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah. So I think that's, we're talking about one day. So it's not like there's any kind of proof, but it's just, these kind of data points are interesting to monitor. I think that's interesting.
The interesting thing, if I were to summarize this, it's that we may be that Bitcoin may be large enough or different enough that it's seen as uncorrelated with traditional assets, or we may be beginning to see some of that decoupling,
or that it's risk off instead of risk out the first time.
There's been other times where it's demonstrated this. I think this is like an interesting data point. We can add this to the list of data points, but I don't think it's like a pivotal moment. I don't think like, oh, we're never going to see correlation with stock market again. I don't think, I think it's a large window of time in which we're going to see this behavior bounce back and forth. Sometimes it's correlated, sometimes it's not. It's also, I mean, correlation, it's not an exact science. It's always a function of like what time period are you talking about and how frequency are sampling it. How frequent are you sampling it within that time period? You can get very, very different answers. I mean, just taking like stocks and bonds or stocks and gold, you can come up with very different answers based on like what parameters you choose. So it's not like everyone agrees on a specific standard and that you can just get a conclusive answer. But yeah, I think we're going to still see instances of both, whichever camp you're in, whether you believe it's not correlated or it'll become not correlated, or you think it will be correlated, you can argue anything you want. But I think over time, we're going to see more instances than less of not correlated. And I feel super strongly that long term, it will not be correlated fundamentally.
Yep. I think before we go all into the Bitcoin implications of this, I actually think it's important to take a giant step back and understand what the hell is going on here. Because I think this is, you know, caveat, obviously, I'm not an expert. None of us are. We're trying to figure this out in real time. I don't think anyone really knows what's happening or what.
Max, the experts are not experts either. So
exactly. There are no experts. This is true. But I've started to do a little bit of thinking about this. And I think, you know, I remain very open to having my mind changed by you guys or anyone in the comments. I would love to hear, you know, folks chime in here. But I'm trying to understand, you know, what are the motivations behind this? Who wins and who wins short term and long term? And then I think Bitcoin can kind of fit in that. So the first thing I've been thinking about is, you know, you have a lot of people like, oh, this is ridiculous. And obviously it's kind of interesting because you have, you know, different camps. Like Bitcoin is supposed to be just, you know, an ideals perspective. It's free markets, right? Like free markets all the way. And so you would expect then a lot of, you know, the Bitcoin community be like, yeah, this is bad. You know, this is tariffs, free markets. On the other side, you've got people that, you know, maybe support Trump for various reasons and, you know, say, well, you know, perhaps there is a different game here. And that game is you can't have a strong manufacturing base and the global reserve currency. Choose one, which obviously could be very good for Bitcoin as well. And Trump is choosing to reshore. Now, you can also then say, well, who is Trump and his administration? Let's say his administration, because, you know, obviously there's a lot of smart people and not so smart people. Like there's a lot of people at the table and no one knows exactly what he's doing. Is Trump crazy? Is he crazy like a fox? Remains to be seen. But I think, you know, as I started thinking about it, I don't think at least the people around it, people like J.D. Vance and Elon Musk, they're not simpletons. And so, you know, if you think about in the long run, if you put on tariffs and you get reciprocal tariffs, you know, that brings some manufacturing back and maybe they really do believe, hey, let's rebuild Ohio and, you know, some of these places. But at the cost of eventually, you know, your goods are going to get less competitive. It's only going to make China, at least globally, you know, China is going to now double down on figuring out their own, you know, supply there. And obviously, we're not going to get cheap goods here in the U.S. But what's interesting to me is I also have to believe 100% these guys know that even if you wanted to reshore manufacturing into places like Ohio, you know, at best, that's a very temporary band-aid because AI is going to be the one that does that anyway. It's going to be robots. Like Optimus is supposed to drop in 2026, right? So even if you wanted to bring manufacturing back, it's going to be robots. It's not those people that are going to get the jobs back. So then the question becomes, in my mind, why would you do this? And I have two ideas. These are just kind of like, kind of out there. So I'm curious your take on this, that you might do this. I hope I'm wrong on the first one. The second one seems more right to me. The first one is, one reason you might do this is if you think you're going to go to war. And if you think you're going to go to war, then you want to make sure all costs be damned. You want to make sure that you're building all the national security strategic supplies here in the United States, no matter what, all economics be damned. That's one option. I hope that's wrong. It's possible. I mean, people always say, right, the Thucydides trap, trade war leads to hot war. I hope that's wrong. It's a possibility, though. A second possibility that I can't shake out of my head, and like I just feel like there's something I'm sniffing here, and I feel like there's something big, is if you really believe super intelligence takeoff is going to happen in the next 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years max, then that might radically, like you're basically planning for the most important time in human history is literally right now for the next couple of years. And all else be damned, once we, you know, reach a point that there's super intelligence, singularity, whatever you want to call it, who knows what comes next. But in that time period, you have to do whatever you can to basically remain competitive in a world where China is just absolutely dominating, as we discussed last week, on the energy supply, on, you know, sort of super cheap compute. Maybe they're catching up on chips. And you say, you know what? Even if it shoots us in the foot in some ways, 5-10 years down the line, we need to make it as difficult as possible for them to compete with us on the compute hardware in the short run. Anyways, obviously, Bitcoin then comes into that in different ways, shapes, or forms. But I'm just curious your immediate reactions to those. Do you have other explanations of what is actually the motivation?
I think both your ideas can be combined too. You can flip number one on its head. That not that you believe you're going to go to war, but you don't want to go to war. So if you're weak on manufacturing capabilities, especially around semiconductors, as well as just like steel and things like that, you become weaker, and you're in a weaker position to prevent war. So that's how I would frame that. But I think for either scenario, you know, having strong manufacturing capabilities, especially semiconductors, is important because right now there's like extreme dependence on Taiwan and TSMC for the whole world, not just for like military, but just everything. Like computers are everywhere. They're, you know, there's hundreds of chips in our cars. Everyone holds a phone. And so that is, it's strategic for any major economy or country to have that capability, manufacturing capability. And right now that it's highly concentrated.
And to be clear, not just chips, as we talked about last time, energy as well. China is absolutely just dominating on the lithium ion battery front and solar front. And if you believe that's going to be important, like you have to own both the chips and the energy. And right now, both of the supply chains are gone. So,
and the energy could be the limiting factor in AI, right?
I think it's the limiting
factor. Right now it looks like it's going to be, I don't know, for, you know, months or years out from that, but if we're sort of hitting asymptotes without being able to unlock more energy opportunities to, you know, to power data center, to power chips, that can be a huge threat. And I also think like the world, I think we're not as comfortable imagining how fast the world's changing. We're very good at rooting in what has happened. You know, even the idea of make America great again is an idea about let's go back to this way that the world used to be. Like when my grandfather did such and such, my father did such and such, and I should be able to do the same. And the world is just changing very quickly. It's changing much faster. So, you know, I don't know if you can really return to an old greatness, but I think you can build a new greatness by focusing on energy, AI, you know, like you mentioned, Optimus. So, you know, all of this stuff, all these mechanical activities are going to get done by robotics within, you know, probably years. And so anything that's trying to harken back to an old style to me feels like it's sort of a false promise. The only thing that you can really do is look forward. And I think there's definitely forward-looking people trying to do these things. And I think, you know, more self-sovereignty around things like energy and chip manufacturing probably will help long-term, and it could prevent war, I think, like Steve says. So I'm a fan of trying to prevent war in whatever ways we can. Yeah. I think Bitcoin's a great peacemaker in the sense that it kind of causes everybody to collaborate long term, but we still have to get to that long term. Doesn't all happen in the short term.
Yeah, I agree with your take 100%. Like, you can't go back to the past. That ship has sailed. You have to look to the future. But I think maybe the one thing that I would just really reemphasize that I think most pundits, political people, like almost everyone, even on Twitter, is missing, with the exception of like, who was that OpenAI guy that went on Doorcash last year and everyone was saying he sounded kind of crazy? He's probably right. Ian, he's probably too conservative, which is like the window. If you really believe takeoff happens and you really believe we're going to pop into a robotic future and you really believe that's in 5 years or fewer and maybe in like two, then like the future, it doesn't really matter. You have like all that matters is like you have to win energy and chips now, like today. And to me, this move makes a lot more sense in that frame.
Yep. Cool. Well, we are not a political show. We are apolitical.
No, and I want to be clear on that, just to be clear. I'm not saying like Trump could also be crazy. Like, this is not at all political. I'm just trying to look at this from like, if I'm playing chess, why would I make this move? Like, who benefits from it? And also, you know, bringing this back to the Bitcoin show, like, you know, kind of like Steve said, I do think it's important to bring that full circle. Bitcoin is going to win no matter what, right? Like, either way, Bitcoin wins. So
I think the chess analogy is you promote your pawn and then choose a knight instead of a queen. And everyone's like, why in the world would you promote to a knight?
Yeah.
But it can sometimes be a brilliant move. We'll see.
I know you were
all right. Steve's a big chess player. We were just chatting chess on our mountain bike, right?
I play. I am not highly rated, but
not highly rated. can we talk about this the Google ban on the Bitcoin dev list? I thought this was I don't have full context on this, so I thought this would be a good time for us to chat and I could learn about it, and maybe other people who don't have as much context could also learn about it. So it was a few days ago, was it 4/2? So it was 2 days ago. Google banned, it says the Bitcoin dev mailing list appears to have been banned by Google. And when you try to look at it, it says banned content warning, Bitcoin development mailing list has been identified as containing spam, malware, or other malicious content. That sounds scary, right? For more information about content policies on Google Groups, see our Help Center article on abuse and our terms of service. Back to safety button. So it sounds to me like this is like my first gut reaction when I hear this. I'm like, okay, maybe this mailing list got swept up in a big, you know, kind of dragnet of attempts to kind of remove certain types of risk that maybe the broader crypto industry would present on like a group mailing list. And I haven't really studied this, so I don't know if that's what happened or if we have evidence of it being more of a specific target or not. But I'm curious to hear sort of about that perspective. And then also just like, what is the history of this list? I haven't been on the list, so I don't know if like that list has a lot of history of these kinds of problems. And Steve, I know we're each on a separate Google group list. I don't know if Max is on it, but we're on a separate Google groups list, which is very Bitcoin topical. And I wondered like,
a Zoogler list, right?
Right. And I don't know, has that also gotten caught up in the same type of controversy? Or do you think there was something specific on the dev list that was problematic?
So I'm not aware of that ex-Google list ever being banned or punished in any way. Regarding the Bitcoin dev list, a lot of things to talk about here. I mean, I'd start with, you know, what is the Bitcoin developer list? It's Bitcoin-dev. It's been around for over a decade. It's where, you know, what is this list? It is where technical Bitcoin developers post, you know, proposals typically. It's a relatively formal list. It's more formal than like a community forum. There's a community forum called Delving, which is a couple years old. It's more formal than that. Certainly more formal than like social media. It's where developers go to, there's sort of a standard. Like before you post there, you should have done your homework before posting a proposal that you understand prior art, what have other people done in the past, and you build upon that. And it's kind of,
so it's not really for brainstorming, more like
it's not for brainstorming. And there's like an expectation that when you do post a proposal and you've looked at the prior art, that you actually reference the prior art out of courtesy. So it's
closer kind of like where BIPs would get discussed today.
They can get discussed there. Yeah.
But would that be like a common forum for that, or are there other, that happens in lots of places?
I think the default way to discuss a BIP is within the BIP itself. On GitHub.
Like on GitHub, yep.
Yeah. But certainly there's discussion of BIPs on this mailing list, but in pre-BIP stage as well. So it doesn't have to be at the BIP stage. It can be, you can have a proposal before it's a BIP on this list. In terms of formality, it's closer to like an academic paper than it is a Nostr post, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I explain that just so people know what the nature of this particular list is. And there's not, it's also moderated by longstanding Bitcoin developers. And there's not like scams on this list. There's not spams, or there's not scams. There's nothing, I've never seen content there that would like merit a ban, or that is trying to, I mean, and mainly because we have moderators who eliminate that. So I don't think anyone could come up with like an example of where it broke content policy for Google. So that's one point. Secondly, people might be wondering, like, why are these cypherpunk developers using Google Groups for an email list. So I'll describe a little bit of history there, because even that's controversial. This is only like a year or two old. And oddly, the mailing list, whoever's hosting it, keeps kicking us off of that host. So the Linux Foundation used to host it. It also was hosted by, I think it's Oregon State's open source group. Some university in the Northwest. And both of those organizations kicked the mailing list off. Same with Lightning Dev email list.
Why?
I don't have all the details there. I don't know. I mean, I know Spiral like helped fund it. Like we made a donation to the Oregon State open source group to help pay for it. So I don't think it's funds. I really don't understand. I just know that every time it gets, I've encountered a couple times where it's been, there's like this urgent need to find a new home. And then everyone scrambles and is like, where do we host it? And then like some people say, oh, let's do Google Groups. And then others are like, that's not cypherpunk. And they can censor and ban. And, but finally this last time there was no other, because like having a single developer hosted as well, then that they're a single point of failure. So a year or two ago was decided to use Google Groups, and somewhat surprisingly this week it got banned. It's been recovered a couple days later, so it's alive and active again. I don't know exactly the reason. So getting into something DK brought up, you know, was this like a targeted, did like Sundar decide like, I hate Bitcoin, let's ban this list? I don't think that's the case. I don't think it was targeted in any way. I'm guessing that there was some trigger in their machine learning that like said needs to be banned, and it just automatically got banned. We have seen a history of this with Google. A few years ago, the Bitcoin conference was in Miami. It's like the largest Bitcoin conference in the world. Tens of thousands of attendees. It's a big deal. And they were using YouTube for production, including live production, doing a live shows just like this. I recall that YouTube banned them during the conference while they were live streaming, and they went down for hours.
Jeez. Wow.
I worked at Google for almost a decade. Still have some contacts there. Who are higher up. So whenever these issues arise, I usually ping them and annoy them. But one in particular is a Bitcoiner. So he's like my insider guy. So he helped in that situation get it back running again. But it just seems crazy to me that you have to have like these special connections to recover from a situation. And then this week with the mailing list, I don't know what happened to trigger it. I mean, Jack Dorsey tweeted at Sundar. I don't know if that triggered something. I reached out to my contact again. I don't know if that helped, or it was just, it was going to naturally be recovered by some human team. I don't know. But I mean, moving forward, it would be good to know why, but also regardless of what the reason is, it's definitely not an ideal solution. And so, I mean, a call to action for listeners and people in the community and stuff is like, is there a censorship resistant, decentralized, distributed content mechanism that could help solve this?
Do we have by chance any protocol that could issue permissionless identity and allows you to post to a free market of relays whereby one could potentially bypass Google?
I didn't hear Steve say vibe coder.
We got every possible keyword in there. No, so my question to you guys and my question to people who are Nostr advocates is like, this seems like something Nostr is intended to solve. So yep. Who's working on, the requirements of an email list is different than what Nostr delivers today. Yep. I'd also say, I mean, my own opinion on the email list, I don't think Bitcoin developers would say it has to be an email list. Like we can look more abstractly at what are the requirements for this list. I mean, it needs to be, there needs to be like a permanent archive, one that there's strong belief it'll persist forever. And it needs to be outside the control of one person or one company or one entity. It needs to support moderation.
I was going to ask about what exactly, how does moderation work, or what are the requirements from the Bitcoin dev list perspective? Is it like moderation for who's allowed to read, who's allowed to write? What other kinds of moderation authority might you have?
There's two or three developers that have the role of moderator. They see all posts initially, and they don't get automatically publicized.
So kind of queued up for approval.
Yeah, so it's a strong form of moderation where they have to approve before it gets published. I'm pretty sure that at least with the old like Linux Foundation mailing list, I don't know if it's still true, but all of the moderated content is still accessible. So you can sort of like verify the verifiers, right? So if you don't trust the people who are moderating, you can still go and see the content that was moderated not republished. So that seems like a pretty good checks and balances.
Who hosts that? Who's paying to make sure the backups are stored?
Well, I mean, historically, it's been on like just an email servers from Linux Foundation, Oregon State. And like I said, I mean, Spiral helped fund it. And I'm sure there's other donors. And maybe with either of those, like it just came out of an overall fund, you know, non-Bitcoin fund to run these servers. For Google Groups, and Google pays for it, right? I mean,
one question on the requirements. Why could you, what would you need beyond just form software? So like, why not just do it on Bitcoin Talk as an example?
Yeah, it's a good question. And historically, Bitcoin Talk was the go-to place for, serious technical Bitcoin conversation. I don't know why it moved on. I can only, others obviously who were there back in 2012, 2013 would know. My speculation would be like, what's sort of just a typical pattern with this stuff is like, it starts off high quality, high signal to noise. It gets more and more popular. And then there's people who are contributing in a way that's like not high signal to noise, especially if the standard is high for rigorous technical discussion. There's a smaller group of people who are willing and able to do that. So maybe the signal noise dropped and people moved to a new forum, which today Delving is a really good forum. Again, it's more relaxed than the mailing list. There's still rigor to it. Like you're expected with a post to have more rigor, but it can be less rigor than what people would expect with the mailing list.
So I have an idea just I want to throw out, because I haven't thought about where Nostr would not work yet. So DK, I'm really curious to hear your perspective on that. I know people are saying Nostr fixes, maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But just in terms of like a very short-term solution, it doesn't solve everything you need in terms of like perfect censorship resistance forever. But I think it would be an extremely interesting experiment. And I think the founder would be willing to probably like work with this community to try and like give them the features they need. Because I know for a fact it was one of his stated goals to bring Bitcoin Talk over here, which is Stacker News. Like, I wonder, could you have a Stacker News forum, what do you call it, territory, which is essentially a Reddit sub where you can have moderation. You can potentially have, obviously, Bitcoin sort of signal giving. You can have identities, potentially even bringing your Nostr key over for identity. Does not have the perfect censorship resistance. Obviously, you're still dependent on the company Stacker News, although Kian's stated goal is eventually to completely decentralize, whether that's via Nostr or something else. But that could be, and I know that's something he would love to see happen, would probably like put some other things on pause to help. So it might be something short-term worth exploring if the community is open to it.
It's a good topic to discuss. One question I'd have is like, how is that different from the Delving forum? And then secondly, it doesn't really solve, I mean, the concern right now with Google Groups is like, well, this company controls the content. Well, the Stacker News solution, it also is a company controlling it. obviously Stacker News is very different than Google. Google's this enormous company. And like, you know, I said earlier, I don't think Google's like intentionally being evil against this forum, but because it's such an enormous company and they have to deal with so much legitimate spam and scams, they just set up systems that try their best, or I don't know if they try their best, but they try. And these systems sometimes catch things that didn't deserve or merit catching. Stacker News or a small startup probably wouldn't suffer from that. But as soon as it becomes popular, then they'd suffer the same fate.
Well, to be clear, I think the major difference there, and I'm not saying that this is the perfect solution, right? Like, to be clear, there, like, centralization is still an issue. But the reason this would be different is, number one, Ken's stated goal is to figure out how to decentralize. And I know his other stated goal is to figure out how to bring the developer talk to Stacker News. Like, this is one of the things he wants to build for. So I guess what I'm saying is, like, unlike Google, you know, you would have a super capable developer who's probably willing to, like, say, hey, I'm willing to solve these problems for you, including, for example, like, one solution I can imagine Kian doing immediately. And I'm bringing kind of the Nostr piece in. The reason I'm leaning so hard on Stacker News is I actually think the forum software is basically ready to rock and roll with a few minor tweaks. Is you could, he would probably be willing to, in fact, he already has this feature where when you post on there, you just check a button, and maybe you can even do that automatically for the forum where it automatically posts to Nostr relays in the background.
Yeah, so I have two questions. I still have the question that I raised a few minutes ago about delving. Delving feels, and I think delving uses discourse as the backend. I think so, but or discuss one of the, it uses one of those like third parties. So, just from an experience standpoint, I'm not sure the difference between delving and Stacker News. The other, a related question that I would need to ask developers, I somewhat recall when we had to switch the mailing list from Linux Foundation to Google Groups, people were suggesting, why don't we just use delving? And I forget all the reasons why that was not chosen, because you could even ask, like, yeah, why even have an email list? Why not just use delving? You could have one channel or forum within delving, which is for like the most rigorous proposals, just like the email list, and then you could have ones that are like what we have today. I forget all the reasons that we didn't go that route. I seem to recall, a single person like owns that server and domain. So you're putting, that would be one difference. Like, even though it's a respected, trusted developer in the space, that's different than you get a different set of trade-offs with that versus like Google hosting it. Google generally, I think, is dispassionate about politics or moderation on Bitcoin or whatever, where an individual developer, you know, can be trusted one day and not trusted the next day, or sentiment can change. But I don't know all the reasons. So that would be an open question. Another question I have is more from Stacker News' standpoint. Why would they prioritize this from a business perspective? Because I do. And so I think it's still a niche problem. I think it's within cryptocurrency and Bitcoin world, it's not niche, because I think there's so many scams within cryptocurrency and Bitcoin that these companies set up filters, or their machine learning learns that to ban a bunch of stuff if it even like somewhat smells. And banks are like this too, right? If you have literally, you know, there's company, if you have Bitcoin in the name of your company, it makes it 10 times harder to get a bank account. If you don't have the name, right, Bitcoin, it can be the exact same company, and then it's easy to get a bank account. So all these traditional organizations are set up, and again, I don't think they are out to get cryptocurrency and Bitcoin in general. They have experienced tons of fraud and scam, and where their customers are harmed, or they could be held legally liable. So they're just reacting to that with flawed systems. So, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to speak for Kian, and we should definitely share this episode with him, as we are now wont to do whenever we speak with someone. Just watch the episode, then we can talk. But I do think there are two major, I think I'll answer each of your questions the way I would. Number one is, what's different about this? Well, this is his stated goal, is to figure out how to build a decentralized organism. And so solving for this one problem is very important. Like if he can't solve this problem, he doesn't get to what he ultimately wants, which is people that own their own territories. And on his roadmap, he's got things like the ability to have where you need to be a member of the territory, like encrypted messaging to be able to see it. And I would say, the fact that they already have as a default, or not a default, but a setting you can choose post to Nostr relays would automatically sort of separate that from other forum software in my mind. But the bigger thing is, I would say the reason to consider Stacker News would be that you have a great developer who has a roadmap that's needs this to get where he wants to go, and has a frankly just personal interest in getting this kind of talk on there, who would probably be willing to prioritize. So that's what I would say. And then on the second thing, why on the business sense, I also would say, maybe it needs to be pushed down the road. Maybe he won't do this. But again, I know that he wants to be able to figure out how to ship forum software that's not just for like what we have today. It's like the ability to have your own custom URL built in. And, I don't know if they'll always share the posts from those onto the original Stacker News or get rid of that. But that would also be interesting too for the community. Like if you had your, because you could already use the value ranking systems and reputation that Kian has there, and all of these developers probably on Stacker News anyway, then it might actually be cool for them to see this get surfaced in more general discussion as well. So people even see this as things happen. Anyways, I'm not saying that's the right answer, but it's at least worth exploring with Kian, and it may solve some of those problems.
I think it's worth exploring, but I would guess that there are additional features that would need to be built to support it. Because my guess is you don't want to ask people to change their behaviors too much. You'd rather just sort of meet them where they are. And that might mean the forum software style of what Stacker News is today isn't appropriate, isn't perfect fit for this, but would need some adaptation. One thing I would note that I think would be in favor of Stacker News is they actually really do have nice email lists and email integration with good content, and almost nobody in the Nostr world will touch email, for maybe reasonable reasons. But I think he both has like email stuff worked out with his forum software, and he has done experimentation in the Nostr world. He built his own relay and built his own client and kind of messed with it. So he has really hands-on experience, and I think he purposely held off on it for now. But if somebody came and said, hey, like this problem can be solved if you can get kind of map the requirements of the existing forum to a thing that you don't control in Nostr, where you do map it back to email, like feels like there's a lot of stuff that he has played with and that he is playing with that's pretty close. And probably like if he can usher in and be kind of that, be that service provider, or kind of like provide service to that community, that would be an important signal to other people also that this is kind of this is somebody who's like mission aligned with the purpose of Bitcoin and Nostr, and just like a good actor, but one who you don't have to trust, one that you can sort of, appreciate, but also operate with trustlessly, trust minimized. So I'd be a fan to explore, and we should definitely share with Kian, but yeah, I guess he'd have to decide if it makes sense.
And as an alternative, DK, I know people have been discussing Nostr solves. If it's, Stacker News integrates Nostr in certain ways. If you were thinking about solving this problem from first principles with Nostr, what do you think the ideal solution would look like right now?
Yeah, I mean, to me, like a Google Groups, to me, the closest thing is something like an email list, is something like private messaging, like a group private message. So I don't think people have spent a lot of time trying to recreate email lists on Nostr, but people have spent a lot of time looking at different forms of private groups on Nostr. And so I think that, the people who've spent the most time on that may be the ones to discuss this with. I know that there's kind of a Nostr adjacent, I think it's sort of similar concepts, but not actually using Nostr, in an app called Simplex. I think we may have played with that.
Oh yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah. I think we should revisit it because I've heard it's gotten a lot better. I downloaded it. I think I messaged you guys and neither of you responded. So I assume maybe you turned off push notice or just dropped it. But we should all revisit.
Yeah. I have a question though, David. You said for Nostr private messaging, but I'm not sure I understand that, because at least for the requirements of this mailing list, it's public. No content needs to be private. except for implementing moderation is maybe an issue, but at least, but like I said, even there, I believe the content that is moderated out remains public as well.
Yeah.
But so assuming it all can be public, there'd still, to exactly match the experience today though, it would need to, a requirement would be that the moderators get to decide, approve first before like the official list, whoever's following that, they see it there. And you have to sort of go out of your way to see the content that's moderated. So if private messaging is required to do that, then okay. But otherwise, the content doesn't need to be private.
Okay. Well, that's good that we got that out, because I wasn't certain. That's why I asked about sort of the specifics of how the administration works. If it's all public content, it does seem like Nostr's better positioned for it. My guess is some of the biggest challenges are, and you know, these are easily solvable, but somebody just has to care to build the solution, and hopefully they don't see it as just a one-off. But I think mapping it to email is probably important, because I don't think we should assume that everybody on the BitDevs list knows or cares much about Nostr or has a Nostr client installed that they can read from. Maybe we hope they get there, but I think step one is like meet them where they are, which is probably on email if that's currently what Google Groups is sending to, versus kind of forcing behavior change. So one thing is who wants to build that mapping layer? And then there's, sounds like this other administrative thing, like you can submit it to the list, but then it has to get reviewed and approved by a few of the administrators. That's like a little bit of a workflow that probably somebody has to decide to build and adapt to. I don't see why Nostr couldn't be good for all of these cases, as long as it's okay with everything being public. You know, some stuff is maybe public, but not very prominent and not sent over the email list until approved. And then some stuff is more prominent and sent over email. I would guess that Nostr is actually really good for that, with, and especially since there's no requirements for anything to be private or keep metadata private. But I don't know that I think we should, if we want to figure out a way to solve this with Nostr, I think we should assume that the customer, the end user, being kind of the BitDevs participant, don't need to necessarily know or care about Nostr, don't need to use a Nostr social media client, that they should just, it's kind of like it should just disappear in the background. Nostr makes it censorship resistant, but they have an experience pretty similar to what they have today, even if their own experience may need to be modified in the case of like a risk of censorship.
Yeah. And I would say that, like, I mean, if I were a developer looking for a project to work on in Nostr, like, you've got a customer right
here,
now. My honest take on this, though, is that, and who knows, maybe the vibe coding changes all this. Maybe you'll be one of us at the hackathon. But my honest take on all of this is that the challenge is frankly just going to be maybe the email integration. That's a really good point. But getting a good enough UX and like having someone good enough to maintain it. And as much as I love Nostr, and anyone knows I'm as big of a Nostr bull as there humanly is, but we have a lot of awesome hackers, but the hackers, like, you need someone that really is like going to make sure this, you need someone that's going to maintain this, because it's going to break. And then, so it has to be someone serious enough or a company serious enough to like make sure it's not just going to die next month because, okay, there's a new project. That's the reason I keep coming back to Stacker News, is like, you know, that project is going to continue to be maintained.
You need somebody like Million, who takes it so seriously and pushes it and fixes all the bugs and like will not give up. He's just like doggedly determined to improve every day. I think if there was somebody who picked up this kind of opportunity with that type of focus, I think it would work.
Yeah. And to be clear, because the worst case scenario, or not the worst case scenario, but a bad scenario would be like, hey, you know, cool, I vibe coded this dope forum software. Hey, Steve, can you please get all of the guys to come in over to the mailing list? And they come in a weekend. And it's like, well, this has not maintained this dependency. And you're like, well, sorry.
That's why I should not be vibe coding the solution to this, because I would be that latter character. You want a Million on this, not me. Vibe
or Kian. Yeah.
Yeah, or Kian. Yeah. But I think it is all solvable. The other people that I tagged in about it are Hodelbod, who built Coracle Social.
Yeah.
And he, one of his goals was to build he called it like a replacement for Facebook groups. So he was going to start with his church group and try to get, you know, sort of a version that felt like it sort of had all the functionality of Google Groups, or sorry, of Facebook groups.
Yeah.
That sort of works on Nostr. And that was, last I talked to him about it was probably about a year ago. So I tagged him in on that thread on Nostr to see if he had any update, but I just did that in the last day. I haven't heard from him yet. And then just like an hour or so ago, I tagged in Jeff G, because Jeff has been working on kind of, he's working on a different form of private messaging. And I understand this doesn't have to be private messaging, but it's a little bit more of a messaging or group type situation. So I just thought maybe in his analysis of it, you know, sort of deciding what to build, if he'd sort of run across it. So we'll wait and hear if Hodelbot or Jeff G have thoughts on it, because they also seem kind of adjacent, at least, to the problem space.
Yeah. Real quick, I want to ask Alex a question. Alex, are you able to click the chat button on Riverside? Looks like we have some audience engagement.
Yeah, I see. I joined late. What are they brainstorming on? I guess you got to rewind. You got to rewind. We're trying to figure out how to save BitDev's list from Google Groups. And then why not? Is it Aviator? A Vitor?
No, she means Vitor, the creator of
Amethyst.
Amethyst. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could be good too. I mean, obviously, he's got a lot on his plate. I really like this idea, though, of some, again, why not a Vitor? Could be a Vitor, but I think what Nostr needs more of at this point is just like
the studio
super focused on making one solution. Absolutely amazing. And so, DK, I really like your idea. Hodelbot is like, he is that. Like, he's been super focused on groups forever. So that seems like a really, really good idea. Jeff G with the private messaging, maybe. But maybe private messaging is almost its own, like, separate problem. What Hodelbot's building seems like a no-brainer. The other one is, what's his name? I don't know him personally, but the guy that was the Truth Social guy that's now building on
Alex Gleason.
Yeah. He has Ditto, which I understand has its own community servers.
That's really well done.
Really, really good option. So
we should tag him in. That's a good
point. If you're checking out existing Nostr clients to recommend for this use case, Ditto might be the Ditto or Quarkles, whatever he calls those new things. Those would probably be the two leading candidates.
Yep. All good ideas. Anything else? Oh, you mentioned the Lightning stuff. Does Lightning have a similar email list, and does it have similar problems, or has that mostly been flying under the radar and not catching the ire of any large platforms?
I think there's no longer a Lightning dev list. They might have just moved to Delving.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So it sounds like that's also a possible solution. Just simplify.
Yeah. Just stop talking and then the problem goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
Lightning development has come to a halt.
Yeah, it's over. It was fun, guys.
Fun while it lasted. So we've got, I think, a couple more topics. One, we want to talk more about things that can be built on Bitcoin, and sort of had a couple ideas on there. And then we also had kind of the false claims about self-custody. Do you guys have a preference, one that you want to hit first?
You can choose.
Okay. I didn't really understand the false market claims about self-custody. I clicked on a bunch of these links and I saw, I think Blue Mat was going back and forth with Adam Back, both longtime OG, super smart guys, but very different opinion on this. What is the issue and what is the debate here, and sort of where do you land on it, Steve? Because I think this was really Steve's.
Yeah. Well, I also shared, just to be clear, she shared like 15 links here. So this is there's something going on the top.
I wasn't sure what I was supposed to be focused on here, though.
Right. I mean, I think you see people like Adam and Matt disagreeing, you know, people who are smart and knowledgeable and been in the space for a long time. How are they disagreeing on something? I think it's for a number of reasons. There's tons of nuance actually in what is the definition of self-custody and custodial?
Right.
I mean, we can pretty easily come up with a definition of, like, you know, a certain setup is definitely self-custody. And we can come up with a definitely custodial, but there's a whole lot of gray area in between. So that's one reason people can get, you know, bicker over things. Another thing is, you know, you'll have a camp of people who are thinking about the long term, trying to deliver on like peer-to-peer cash from the white paper, and our protocol developers. And then you have a group of people who are trying to build products today that are usable for people today. And sometimes a person can play, you know, fulfill both roles. Like, I think Adam Back is an example. I mean, he would fit into both buckets. Roy from Breeze, I think, fits into both buckets. Matt and myself are, you know, we get the luxury of being in just the long-term protocol vision, you know, long-term vision bucket. But I certainly appreciate the challenges of being, of having to build a product that's used today. So in other words, I think if we had tools and technologies and protocols that allowed for an amazing UX that had perfect self-custody and trust minimization for every human on earth with low fees and everything is beautiful, then obviously Breeze SDK would use that, and whatever Blockstream products are, and every company in the space would use these products, and there'd be no bickering. The reason there's bickering is because there's trade-offs. So I think in this case, the contention is around products that are, I think, clearly not self-custody, in their marketing claiming their self-custody. And I think just like, my recommendation would be to just find new copy on how you communicate to it. Because I think what the people behind these products would say is that it's much better than like Cash App or Coinbase or like a River, or like a pure custodial model. And I would agree with them that whether you're using Liquid or Spark or Arc or all these solutions or Cashew or Fediment, all of them have advantages over pure custodial. They also can have drawbacks too. So we can talk about that. But I would suggest, you know, create copy that highlights that benefit to users, but is also honest with users. I guess what I'd be concerned is that if you literally market as self-custody, and then in the future, when an event happens in which people no longer have access to their money, it's been frozen because the regulators have knocked on the doors of a few companies and said, you have to freeze all these assets until the users have provided sufficient KYC information to regain access to their funds. Or just like, nope, this group of users on your system will never regain. They're in the wrong jurisdiction. They're the wrong people. Like, however, they're somehow wrong. You know, they shouldn't have access to their funds, and they get permanently have their money frozen or stolen. And then if the users have been misled thinking it's self-custody, they'd be like, I thought it was self-custody. I thought that was the spirit of Bitcoin. So I think my advice to companies would be like, don't mislead through your marketing, but I absolutely see what you're trying to do with your marketing. So just pick better copy.
Mm-hmm.
That's my summary of the situation.
Yeah. Honestly, it seems a lot like you said, kind of like semantics. And I feel like, I mean, it is important stuff, but like, it's very like, my kind of view on this is that if even someone knows what self-custody is, they're probably, I mean, I don't know, like maybe there's a group of people that are not, but like 99% of people would have no idea what that even means. So I don't know. I feel like this is kind of like a for Bitcoiners, buy Bitcoiners issue right now. I hope we get to the point where that's the norm.
Well, but you can put this in layman's terms. I mean, if no one cares about the future access of their money, then why are we even doing Bitcoin? So yeah,
small group cares, and I think more people will care over time. To be clear, I'm just saying, like, I feel like 99.9% of people, it's like, you know, they're gonna download Cash App, and I'm not saying it shouldn't be dog shit. I hope we get there, and obviously it's
but then I'd say all these products are a waste of time, because if everyone
that actually transition,
like, everyone should just use Cash App.
Very interesting that you mentioned that. So that transitions, I think, honestly, very nicely to the next thing I wanted to talk about, because there was a kind of a spicy take from Justin Shocknet on Stacker News that I thought he, not exactly in the non-custodial sense, but he kind of says that. He basically says, look, guys, for the last 5 years, you know, not that it was a waste of time, because it was actually very important, but we've spent all this time building all these amazing lightning solutions, many of which are non-custodial, and they're awesome and all this stuff. And yet, like, is it really solving a problem that the market has, at least short term, and that we're getting adoption? And his point was kind of like, no, it's awesome that we built all this infrastructure. It's great that it exists. But the sad reality is most people, if they're going to use, you know, Lightning, they are just going to download Cash App. And that's okay for now, because that solves a problem for them, which is probably just buying Bitcoin. And probably, you know, they're not going to spend it because they don't have anywhere to spend to to use it. So I would argue that before we start thinking about, I think self-custody for storing your Bitcoin, that obviously is product market fit. I think that's very clear. I don't think that's forcing something on it. Self-custody for spending your Bitcoin without the extreme, you know, use cases of, you know, whatever, someone that's in a oppressive regime. And obviously those people do have that case, but that's a, you know, a smaller minority. I think what's really interesting that what I took away from his post is, and the thing I can't stop thinking about, is if we want people to use their Bitcoin and potentially even care about that, we have to give them real use cases. We can't force behavior on people. And I think the point that he made is like, guys, stop trying to build for like, you know, buy your coffee or, you know, buy this thing online. That's cool. It's a great demo. But I think that, as we've mentioned before on this show, if you really want this stuff to go crazy and like start the S curve of adoption for Lightning payments or Lightning Plus, whatever, eCash or Spark or whatever it is, then I think the key is, we have to figure out what are the solutions that you can only get with Lightning and potentially even non-custodial Lightning. And to me, his point on things like VPNs, VPSs, things that are digital online services. And in those cases, you may really want private non-custodial to be able to purchase your VPN because you don't want people knowing that you have that. If we want that stuff to take off, I think less on the, you know, hey, you should be using this, and more on the like, what can we offer online digitally that that's the only way you can get it? And that's why I think the market pops.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way to move the needle on Bitcoin usage just through ideology, just through like, hey, I'm a Bitcoiner, so I want to spend it, so I want to prove that it's useful. Like, I think it's fine people do that. I mean, I've done it before. It's fine, but I don't think that's going to move the needle. I think the way you move the needle is you invent use cases that cannot be done without Bitcoin. That is the whole point, is make Bitcoin like, the use of it is essential to build and deliver the service you want to deliver. And I think VPN is probably one of the best use cases we have today, where it's an actual exchange of like value for a very specific utility. I think Nostr is maybe the best at scale example of kind of like the tipping and kind of offering thanks in a digitally scarce environment. So you sort of pair digital scarcity with media, but it's not as much of a, like, it's not a paywall of some sort or a value exchange. I think it's more like for fun and like a cool thing. But I think it's very close to an example of like a digitally native thing you just couldn't do with, like, you know, swipe a credit card and use Stripe or something. You actually have to have Bitcoin and Lightning available in order to make a Zap work well. So I think we just need like tons of those types of examples. And then the VPN one, what's the company, Steve, that's doing the VPN?
Well, there's Mulvad, but I think you're talking about Carl's company.
Yeah. I forget the name of it, though.
Is it Obscura?
Obscura, yeah. So I think if I understand right, in Obscura, they build a VPN client, which is separate from Mulvad, but maybe is similar, dependent. They use Mulvad directly, but they sort of aggregate payments in Bitcoin and they sort of decouple the exit nodes of Mulvad from the actual payment. And so they force a fire decoupling of that, which I think is like, you couldn't do that without Bitcoin in the same way. You'd end up with, you know, all of your, you know, you'd end up with like your address, you know, littered around, and you'd lose a lot of privacy. So that to me seems like a very good example. Do you guys have others, either from the Stecker news thread or other examples of things that you'd say sort of reach that threshold or that limit of importance and requiring Bitcoin?
And so I'm going to reiterate two that we've mentioned on past episodes and then potentially drop a new one. I think that, again, machine-to-machine payments or digital services, even if there are physical services delivered digitally, those are the areas where I would be like sniffing heavily. So a couple of ideas that that I think are super important. And also, this could also make specifically non-custodial Lightning pop, because you don't want to do this from like whatever, for whatever reason, from a centralized service. So the three things that I've said before, these, I'm desperately hoping someone will build these things because I want to fund these things. Open marketplace for GPUs, where you can list with an NPUB and pay with sats. Open marketplace for bandwidth, where you can list with an NPUB and pay with sats. Open
marketplace.
Huh?
Pay with Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Pay with Bitcoin. Open market for hard drives or storage, where you can pay with Bitcoin instantly. And maybe you want that in a way that you don't want to reveal who you are, in which case you have to use non-custodial. Second idea, I've only seen a few people talking about this. To me, my spidey sense is going off. I again, I don't know if I would fund this because this might not be a company, but incentivize torrents. I would be thinking very heavily if I were, you know, trying to make this stuff pop off, non-custodial lightning. How do you get people paid to share torrent files, Magna files? That seems very, very promising in an area where you would need non-custodial lightning. A third area, which Al Jazz shared in an earlier Stacker News post, is if you wanted to provide a service, and I think this is actually very smart, is to think the next steps of like, okay, if AI keeps popping off, what's the next step to fight beyond that? And one is like, you're having all these, I guess it's kind of related to a VPS, a virtual private server, I guess, but like you want to be able to, I don't know, access YouTube, but you want to be able to, or like scrape YouTube or download from it or whatever it is. And now YouTube is saying, well, you know, we think you're a bot. And, you know, maybe you're operating from somewhere else. And one thing you could do with potentially Nostr and just plugging in your umbrella or something is say, hey, I'll sell you the service of, you know, accessing this video or downloading this video for you or whatever. And you can just use my home computer and I can get past the, you know, are you a bot? Because I'm not a bot.
So you want to make a bot farm that's uncensorable.
Well, it
for DDoS.
I mean, text. I'm not saying, or that that's like a human that's, you know, offering something to, for someone else. I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying these things are all good or these things are all things that I would fund. I'm just saying if I follow logically, what's going to make Lightning payments pop off and non-custodial, it's going to be these things where like, there is no other option. Like I have to use this.
Yep. Makes sense. I don't disagree. And sorry, Steve, you had some ideas too?
I was going to share an idea that I heard from, a colleague. It's a different category. Or I mean, I hear you guys on like, you know, let's scope, you know, the scope of like, here's a use case that can only use Bitcoin. Obviously, that's a great area to explore. This one's a little bit different, but I found it to be practical and in the short term. And that would be when you're at dinner with friends or family, or you're in a situation where you're going to split the bill. Right. And, you know, what's common today is, you know, someone says, okay, I'll pay on my credit card. And then everyone else pay me back $20 each or $40 each or whatever the split is. And they might pay you back over Cash App or Venmo or give you cash, you know, physical cash. So that's already a common ritual today. So, you know, some Bitcoiners might, or even us, we might brainstorm, oh, what if there's like this Bitcoin app that could pay in Bitcoin to the restaurant and then like split it and stuff, and maybe in the future. But like, that's not the most likely the restaurant doesn't accept Bitcoin, right? So it's not practical today. What is, and also, what's the incentive, at least to a Westerner who gets like cash back on their credit card, like what's the incentive for paying in Bitcoin when if I get 2.5 cash right now, I get 2.5% cash back in my credit card, like I'm gonna use that. So what's the near-term use case? We're out to eat and I'm like, hey guys, I'll pay the bill. I pay with my credit card, I get 2.5% cash back, all that's dollars, but you guys pay me back in Bitcoin, right? And I like this use case for multiple reasons. First of all, it's sort of aligned with everyone's incentives. I'm still getting my 2.5% cash back. It's an easy experience I'm already doing with the restaurant. The only friction here is that, okay, I got to get my friends to pay me in Bitcoin. But I would say I would be incentivized to do that because I'd love to get no KYC Bitcoin. Like it's a great way to get Bitcoin that doesn't have my identity attached to it. And it's just a great way to get compensated in Bitcoin. And also for, you know, friends at the table today, maybe one of like 8 friends at the dinner or whatever have Bitcoin to pay me. And then depending on, you know, the vibe and dynamics and time available, maybe I try to get others to download a wallet. And that's why, you know, creating onboarding experiences that are like dead simple, no KYC, like no steps. You just install the app and boom, you're in. Kind of like, you know, Boardwalk Cash is like an amazing onboarding experience, but we just need more products of great onboarding. As you reduce that friction, it's more realistic to be like, just tell everyone at the dinner table, just download this app and like within 1 minute, they're up and going. and running, maybe Lexi is going to be that app too, right? So,
how are they funding it? You're saying these are people already have Bitcoin elsewhere?
Well, that's why. So you can flip this on its head. So in the scenario where I'm the Bitcoiner, I'm the one paying my credit card, and hey, everyone at the table, pay me in Bitcoin. In the moment, that's only realistic for people who already have a funded wallet and can pay me. So you'd have to sell the other people over time. That okay, next dinner, you know, come ready. You can flip that though, so that the person paying the bill is the person new to Bitcoin. So they pay the bill with their credit card because they're already set up to do that. That's already experience they know. But they, let's say they've been orange pilled, or they're like, okay, I cave. I'm in. Give me the Bitcoin experience, right?
Guy, try and sell me his religion.
And then other people at the table that do have Bitcoin would pay that person back in Bitcoin, and that's how they get their first Bitcoin, is through being paid back for the dinner. So this feels like a pretty realistic case, and also one that like you only need one Bitcoiner at the table to like create momentum around this. I don't know if there's a product experience around this. It feels more like, you know, it needs to be memeified and just socialized and sort of willed into the consciousness of Bitcoiners, and then people just need to start doing it. But that seems to me to be a pragmatic near-term use case to get Bitcoin flowing between people and onboarding new people.
I mean, so two thoughts on that. One, I think if you want people to do that non-silly, we need something like Lexi that's just so easy out of the box. Like you just like open an app and like, boom, it works. You can start receiving Bitcoin. I think all Bitcoiners probably have this story of like, you know, we all kind of do that like to some degree. I used to do that with like my old roommates. I'd be like, hey man, if you want me to piggyback and I obviously understand this is coming from, you know, very specific set of circumstances. A lot of people would never do this, but they're good enough friends. And like, I know they weren't going to get mad if I was a day or two late paying them or whatever. But it's like, if you want me to pay you back for something, I'm only going to pay you back if I can pay you in Bitcoin. Otherwise, sorry, tough luck. Which I know. And so all of them were like, dude, like, why are you being like, and I'm like, just go with me on this. I'm like, all right, fine. But like, they're like, I just want something that works out of the box. The only thing, to be fair, I could get them to do this with was Cash App. So I used a Cash App at 100%. So like, again, the bar is, you know, it needs to be.
But I'm guessing they already were Cash App customers?
No, some were. Most people, at least in the Bay Area that I found, are Venmo. But that's changing over time. You know, I'm from the South where Cash App dominates, which is cool. But no, I would kind of force it and be like, cool, well, then you have to download Cash App. Otherwise, you're not getting
paid. But they're not doing that in the moment, right? I mean, they have to do IDV, and it's a whole big process.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it was in the moment, but like I would say, you know, I'll pay you once it's downloaded. So maybe it takes them a day or whatever. But all of them that did then forgot I paid them in Bitcoin. And like several years later, like, holy fucking hell, now they're into Bitcoin.
The reason why we don't have enough time today to really get into the no KYC discussion, but I'll talk a little bit about it right now, and then future shows we can talk about it more. But I think a lot of people think the no KYC thing is they latch on to it. It's only like extreme cypherpunks or, you know, people who just want to like give the bird to the government or something. There's a lot of reasons though. I mean, certainly one is around privacy and like it's no one else's business. But another reason is just user experience. And this apply, you don't have to be a cypherpunk or tinfoil hat to care about user experience, but the onboarding user experience between a product which requires you to like provide a passport, a selfie photo with a handwritten message that you're holding up in front of you. Providing proof of residence where you have to supply like your energy bill and address. And I mean, that is an onerous process.
Remember.
Right. And like this, I'm not making this up, right? You have to do this to KYC. I mean, there's different degrees of KYC, but if you download a wallet today that integrates like MoonPay or similar types of products to be able to buy Bitcoin, most are extremely onerous process and also require you to provide your actual home address, which many people, including myself, have been burned through the Ledger hack, where we were Ledger customers. And back when I was more naive than I am today, I just had the Ledger shipped to my home. Like that's how products get shipped to me. And like, that's how most people think, right? And then I didn't realize, oh, in a few years, their customer database or their e-commerce partner's customer database would get hacked, and it would be targeted because it's a rich list of people who have crypto, and then they have their name, their email, their phone number, and their home address. So I became much more sensitive to providing my home address when KYCing for services because, you know, a lot of these, I just don't trust these companies to protect the data. To me, user experience is an under-discussed reason why, and reducing friction and onboarding and making all kinds of experiences much, 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 much easier to onboard people, that's under-discussed. There's also all kinds of other reasons as well, like retaining the benefits of physical cash in a digital world and all kinds of other reasons. But
you just sparked something to me. Like, you're absolutely 100% right on that, giving out your address for any kind of quote unquote crypto service. Like, you're just signing up to be like, you know, it's going to get leaked. Like, it always has. And I don't like doing that either. I wouldn't do it anymore if I can avoid it, obviously. But sometimes you can't avoid it, right? If you want to use the Cash App, is there some kind of, pay sats, pay Bitcoin for like a remailer service? I don't even know if that's legal, but that seems like a really good idea.
You mean something like Earth Class Mail or?
I don't know what that is, but if it's a remail service where you don't have to list your actual address and they forward it to you, yes.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest ones that does that. I don't know if they accept
it. So some challenges I'm aware of there, like, first of all, if you get a secondary address that has that's a PO box that's easily flagged by these services is not permitted. I'm also aware of, even when you use a secondary delivery service that gives a street address, a no PO box, even that, some KYC services deny as well. They really require your actual home address, or they somehow have in their database that's not a home address. So that can be pretty
true. Maybe this is a terrible idea and something I would not want to engage in. Like, maybe this is too spicy for a public podcast even, but like, what about a peer-to-peer Nostr-based marketplace for remailing?
Elaborate. Like,
how would that look?
Well, just like we just said, like, I mean, again, I think the digital stuff is going to pop sooner because it's easier, but like, hey, want to list me as the receiver of your packages? Cool.
Oh.
For a fee, I'll remail it to you.
I don't know, man. That's like signing up for like, yeah, I want everyone invading my home.
Agreed. I guess my point on saying all that is, you know, with the Nostr reputation stuff, right? Like, the people that would sign up would probably be people that have like, I don't know, like a business or something like that. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's probably a terrible idea.
Like a honeypot.
I'm not recommending
for scammers.
It.
But the,
like, if I want to get cocaine dropped somewhere, I'm going to use your service.
Okay, that's a horrible idea. Like, too spicy too.
We'll talk about it on other episodes, but the KYC thing, I think it's the user experience. Then there's another reason, is a group of people a large group of people who can't KYC, especially when you think globally. So they literally just, they don't have the proper information to pass the test. And then a third strong reason is just around privacy and surveillance. And that privacy can take different scopes. Like, there's some certain purchases you don't want like other family members to know. Like, if you buy a gift for like your kid or your partner or whatever, you don't want them knowing that. There's privacy against the state. You don't want the state knowing what you're doing because you don't want to have repercussions in case you're doing activity that the current people in charge don't like. There's many scope or future people. So there's many scopes of privacy that matter to people. So all these reasons are why people are, you know, don't like KYC.
One last thought I want to end on, because I think we've said it many times before, but we're just going to keep hammering it home because it's so important. These are all great ideas, but I strongly believe that if we want non-custodial Lightning and payments to take off, I think there's one use case that's just going to make, like, that's literally going to take this to the moon. And there's going to be lots of little use cases here and there, but like, as we've talked about on prior shows, if we have autonomous agents, like, they're never going to be able to KYC. So if I were building and I really want a non-custodial Lightning to take off, I would be 100% focused on how do I do agent-to-agent payments, machine-to-machine payments, where an agent needs to get data or something and it needs to use Bitcoin and it will never be able to KYC. whoever solves that problem will make non-custodial Lightning go mainstream and probably have a very profitable business.
Yeah, I think things that are not anchored to the real world and that totally require this new world in order to even exist are, at my spidey senses, that's where the interesting stuff will pop first. So I'm with you on that.
If someone's building for agent AB payments, autonomous life today, hit me up.
All right. Well, I think that is a good closure to wrap on. So thanks again, guys, for a great jam. And we'll see you next week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.